Welcome to episode 189 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week I have a recording of one of the sessions that took place during our World Tour events earlier this year. This is Arden Thomas talking about web velocity. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning.
This presentation is on our latest and newest small talk-based product for web development called Web Velocity, web programming at the speed of sound. You may have noticed all our products have new logos. That was something new for the last release. Updated developer icons. Lots of refinement each release. We also try to focus at the very same time as getting out, talking to the customers, finding out what are the most important things for you moving forward? Features, changes we need to make to the product. So anytime any of you have any ideas, suggestions, I could use the product if it only had X, I want to know what that is. And if it's at all, you know, something that's a roadblock to people using the product, I can get that into the product. So please talk to me if you have ideas, suggestions. Take those very seriously. And I mean, you just see with the last release, most of the main features in the last release were things that customers told us. We would really like this feature in the product, like internationalization, became one of our major things because we had like five customers tell us, we've got solutions, we want to market them globally. Help us. So working with them, we got those things added to the product. And I work with engineering and, you know, push them all the time. We need this. We have to have this. This isn't necessary for the next release. So talk to me. We can get those things in. But with Web Velocity, what I like to talk about with features or products is, what is it? Why is it important to me? How does it work? So this is kind of the what, how, and why of high-velocity web solutions. Oh, by the way, Velocity actually was a name I got from Suzanne, who put web in front of it. Had some marketing consultants come in, and they said, that's a fantastic name for a product. So we were happy with it. So what are we going to talk about? What is it? Why do we make it? How is it different? How does it work? What's good about it? Why might you be interested? And we'll also give you a demonstration of actually using the product, developing things very quickly. So what is it? It's an innovative web-based IDE. There's not many IDEs that actually run in the browser. This is one of very few. So it's a pretty rare type of solutions. I wanted to mention just a couple of the goals, kind of the internal goals that we have when we created this. And one of the things that has gotten a lot of attention in the past couple of years is Ruby on Rails. And they've had to build a blog server in 15 minutes, and they've got a number of things on YouTube where you can see this. Well, we wanted to do that better, do that faster. Our lead engineer on this, he types very quickly. I think he can do that solution in like 5 minutes. He types quicker. So he types slowly, 10 minutes. But we can do it better. And where Ruby on Rails is great as long as you're staying on the rails. What we wanted to do is give you that same speed or even faster. But when you want to go outside that and do other things, you're not boxed in. It's like a lot of 4GL type solutions. They're great at what they provide, but if you want to do it different, you're out of luck. Well, we want more than that. We want to give you that speed, but then when you want to do really interesting, cutting-edge things, go outside the box or think of brand new things, We don't stop you from doing that. You can still continue to develop. Another goal that we have, and this is partly an internal goal to help have some competition within our own engineering, and that is make the web browser IDE as good or better than the client IDE. And a lot of people would say, well, that's impossible. That's a very lofty goal. And we've got a number of improvements coming out in the next version that really are impressive. And this is good because it gets a little competition among the teams, and we can, there's so much shared between these three products, we can borrow ideas and code between them and improve all of them. Just like we've done, you've heard that our OR mapping solution, we've really improved that a great deal, and all of our products use that. So everybody wins for moving those things forward, and everybody can take advantage of those improvements. So what's so good about it? Well, what it allows you to do is sometimes web programming, you have a client program, you do some web programming, and sometimes there's some awkwardness in that. This makes a lot of your programming more like client programming. And I'll show you some of that also in the demonstration. And what we've done is we've taken basically the VisualWorks engine, VisualWorks libraries. People kept asking us, why don't you do something with Seaside? Here's something so current, so advanced and powerful. Why aren't you doing anything with that? Well, we are. And also we took that and we added an innovative web IDE on top of that, that leverages all of that. And of course, it's based on standards. It's not using something proprietary or different. It uses CSS, HTML, XHTML. So how does it work? One thing I should point out is one of the goals of Web Velocity was to help get new people into the Smalltalk community. So we wanted a product that would be attractive to not just Smalltalk developers, but web developers in general. And do they need to know Smalltalk to be productive with this? No. Why? Most of the things you can look at examples in scripting and just kind of plug in your own names and things and you're up and running without knowing or needing to learn Smalltalk. And of course, as you want to do more and more, you're going to learn Smalltalk, and we bring people into the Smalltalk community that way. We use the very successful Active Record pattern, and we also have that available, as was mentioned, in all of our products. So why do we make it? We want to grow the Smalltalk community. Web programming is harder than it has to be, and this makes it a lot easier. You can get up and running very quickly with this product. And one of the things that you'll see is you can get an application up and running very quickly and deployed, and then you can gradually refine it, make it prettier, dive into some deeper capabilities of Seaside and VisualWorks, and do more and more with it. But you can get something up and running. Maybe it's critical that you get this app running very quickly and being used. And I'll show you an example of that. These are some of the capabilities and features. It has integrated unit testing. If that's part of your process, it makes it very easy to use that as part of your development process. A more natural application flow because we use Seaside, Active Record. Like VisualWorks, there's a community repository just for Web Velocity. You can also create your own repository for your development group. You can also have your own repository on your local machine, which it runs in SQLite and gets automatically installed with Web Velocity. Some of the technology we support, the development browser right now is Firefox 3 Plus for development. Deployment runs on all the major browsers. We're looking to expand that for probably the next release, which will be this summer. We run against all the major databases. We use these. We use for a lot of the AJAX capability of the browser. Also jQuery. And we're moving some things more towards jQuery because they do a superior job at cross-browser capabilities that these don't do as well. So removing some of that, and that's one of the things that's going to help us expand what browsers you can use for development. And of course, this is a cross-platform solution. So you can run a Web Velocity server on a number of different platforms. So who might be interested in this? Anybody who wants to build, not just a static web page, probably other solutions that would be better for static web pages, but if you want, especially if you have a difficult or complex model underneath, or say you have a VisualWorks application or Object Studio application, and you've got a very nice domain model or complex domain model, you can move that over under Web Velocity and make it a very nice web application. So you can webify those applications. There's a lot of sharing between these three products. Anybody who wants to quickly and easily build web applications, and if you're a Smalltalk user, a Smalltalk group, if there's other groups in your organization that are not using Smalltalk and want to do these type of web applications, they can use it, and as they want to get more, as they want to enhance their applications more and more, that puts your group in a good position to help them out and also expand the use of Smalltalk in your organization, which is generally beneficial to Smalltalk groups.
And now a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. There are many constructs like min, max, and or that you can implement either using if statements or by calling library methods. Which should you choose? I almost always choose to call the library methods because they communicate more information to the developer. An if by itself tells you how an operation is performed, but not why. Methods like min, max, and or get closer to telling you why an operation is being performed. The word max quickly conveys its intent better than an if on an inequality. I usually prefer to go further still and create a separate method that performs the operation and gives it a readable name, but I still use the library calls to help me. The point is that you need to convey the information clearly to the developer, and lower-level constructs don't help with that communication. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
So, the demonstration that I want to give you is, imagine the scenario. You walk into work on Monday morning, and immediately your boss says, "We've got an emergency meeting, 9 o'clock. So you go to the meeting and they say, "Well, we've got new products out in the field and we're having some problems with them. There's issues and we need a web application so we can communicate from the salespeople and the sales engineers to the product engineers, and people can update and see what the status is and communicate through this web application. And we need it yesterday." So your boss asks you to come back at lunchtime and give him some options. Tell him what you can do. So let's try to see what we can do about that with Web Velocity. Here's my cursor. So this is what Web Velocity looks like when you first start it up. And if you want to learn how to use it, you can come right over here, go to documentation, and learn about how to do application development, test, debug, deploy, get an overview, see some of the code library guides, etc. What we want to do is build a new application. So how is that going to work? Well, let's come here and say new application. We'll call it product tracker. So any company that sells products, what is this? Well, let's say this is a company selling commercial industrial products. And we're going to want it to work with a database, so we'll have it generate a schema for us. We'll say OK. Now notice database here is in red. If I've already got, you know, database information out there, I can use it and I can generate models. But here we're gonna generate the tables from this, have it generate the tables for me. But you can go either way. So I've got PostgreSQL on this platform. I'm just gonna type in the proper parameters to use this database. And it's a slightly different set of parameters depending on the database that you choose, what's appropriate for it. Schema is public, username, Postgres. And I type these in, I can test it out to see if it works. I'll test the login, it says, you're good, it's configured. You can also come here to overview, basically type in, what is this all about, what does this do? So what are we gonna do? Well, we're gonna come here, well, they said we've got some products to track, we've got issues with the products, and we want to know the status of those issues. So let's create some new models. My first is going to be product, spell that properly. And I want that to work with a database table, so I will choose a table for product. I'm also going to choose these three by default. I want to be able to display products in a list. I want to have a view of a product. And I want to be able to edit the product. Grid is, say I want to do a photo library or something, and I wanted a grid of photos. That would be where you would choose a product grid UI. And there's also some options for generating tests. Let's go ahead and say OK. I also want a status. We'll use the same thing selected. And finally, we'll have an issue. OK. So now I'm going to go to my schema, my database schema, look at the source code. And I can see I have a table for products. This is where you're going to describe what your database table looks like. And it basically gives you, here's all this is commented, this is example. So you're just gonna say, okay, yeah, I want a primary key called ID. Here's how to do integers, strings, text. Here's how to do foreign key references. It gives you examples of exactly how to do this. So you basically will just type in your column names and use the example of what type of data that you want it to be. So rather than have you sit here and watch me type all this stuff in, I'm going to copy and paste some of this. Okay, so for product, I've got a primary key called ID, I've got a name for the product, what version it is, and when that product was released, what date it was released on. So I'm just using those columns. Now notice that when you type something in here, you don't have to accept it to compile it. Every time you type it, it's compiling immediately. And if there's any error, you'll see it highlighted. And we'll see some of that. Let's go to status now. We're going to do a similar kind of thing. Status is going to be a very simple description. Status is simply going to have a primary key and a name. And I have one more table, issues. And issues is going to be my most complex table. And issues will have, again, a primary key, the name of the issue, who posted it, any comments anyone wants to make about it, and a reference to a status. Typically you'll have a little larger, this is a relatively small screen, 800 by 600, usually you'll have a little more screen real estate. So name, who posted it, comments, then you've got two foreign key references. My issue is going to have a status, and my issue is going to have a product that it's an issue about. So okay, I've described what the tables are. I created the models, said here's what the tables look like. Now, you can come to actions and say, okay, let's recreate those tables. And it does that for me. Now I want to map those tables into objects. So go to mappings, product. Let's map the name, version, and release date. Back to schema mappings. Let's map the status. We'll map the name. And finally, the issue. We'll map the issue name, who posted it, comments, the status, and the product. So we've kind of set some things up now. This didn't take too long. I copied and pasted a little bit so you wouldn't watch me type, but this didn't take that long. So now what can we do? We can actually go and browse, open up a products webpage, create a new product. So this is an industrial company. Let's say we've got an AQ10 turbine. It's version 1.0. It came out January 4th. So now I've created a product. Let's create another one. We'll create a EF generator, version 1.1. It came out in September 2009. So I've created two products. What else can I do? Well, I want to create the statuses for the issues. So let's say we've got a new, and you would create whatever process you use in your organization, appropriate things. We are in progress on the solution. It's in review and completed. So there's a status that my issues can have. And finally, let's look at issues. Let's create an issue. So I can have an issue. I can say I've got with the AQ10 turbine startup failure. I'm posting it, and I can put some comments in here. Fails on startup 5% of time. Now look at, on the bottom, for my status, it tells me this is a status and this is a product. I probably want to do something a little different with the actual status name and the product name. So how do I do that? How do I make that change? Well, come back here, go to the product class, source code, printing, and here it almost gives me the code that I want. So you see I've got an unmatched quote on the end. I'm going to remove that, it's immediately compiled. So I just want to show the product name. Let's go back to here and simply click the refresh button. And now we can see a product name. It's pulled down. It shows me whatever products I have, so I can choose the appropriate one.
Now a short interlude for this week's Squeak News with Randall Schwartz.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Rita Freudenberg has announced that the official SqueakFest website is now live and ready for you to propose a presentation, workshop, or panel. SqueakFest is an annual conference where developers and users of the eToys media-rich authoring and experimentation environment based on Squeak get together to share ideas, experiences, and their enthusiasms with colleagues from around the world. This year's conference will be held at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington, North Carolina, in the USA, from the 26th to the 28th of July, and the theme will be eToys in the STEM classroom. The conference will offer an opportunity to reflect on the achievements of the NSF-funded project using Squeak to infuse technology, shortened to Use It, which is now reaching its third year. The team are keen to hear from individuals and groups with experience teaching with eToys, as well as non-classroom eToys use, particularly as it relates to OLPC pilots or homeschooling. More information will be added to the website as it becomes available, but the organizers ask presenters to get presentation information to them by completing and submitting the online form no later than the 11th of June. To get a flavor of what to expect at the conference, have a look at the report from last year's SqueakFest, linked from the news.squeak.org website. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my Smalltalk-related blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
Let's do the same thing with status. Let's come back here. We'll go to the status class, source code, printing. And we're going to do basically the same thing. I just want to see the name. Go back to here, just click the refresh button. Okay. So I've got a new say I can choose what the status is, new, and it's for this product. I'll go ahead and accept that. Let's create just another issue. Let's say it's posted by me. So basically now, anytime if I want to go into one of these, or I'm a product engineer or a field engineer, I can go to this application, go in, edit it, make new comments in the field, change the status in progress, accept it, and now everybody can see this. So basically now, we've got it basically up and running. We want to make a couple more refinements. One of those is we can simply just override one of the issues, or override one of the methods, just like what we did with the printing to get the status of the product. We can have it put up whatever names, maybe a string, and then the name of the product or the name of the issue up in the title. So basically all those things are for you, you get a default, and then you can just kind of go in and put in whatever your customization is for those things. Other things I want to show you. One is that for this we have some themes, and we have some basic CSS built into this, and we can choose some different CSS themes. So let me choose this one called Ragged Shore, and I can simply refresh, and I've got a different CSS theme. Let's try another one. Here's Seaside, refresh. So what you will probably want to do is use those CSS as a starting point. What you probably want to do is use a custom CSS or maybe your corporate CSS standard, integrate that into here, and then you'll be using the corporate standard for your product. So what else would we like to do? Well, if I've got people out in the field and around the globe who are using and communicating through this application, I might want to use an RSS feed to get to know when things have changed, or there's new issues or new status changes. So what we can do here is browse issues and get an Atom feed. And if you're using Outlook or Mail or Bottom Feeder, okay, you can simply subscribe to this and automatically be notified of product changes. It just comes built in. You just have to use the appropriate URL. So now basically, at lunchtime, when you go back for your meeting, rather than saying, okay, here's an option, you can say, here's a solution, and IT gets the domain set up, we can install this immediately, start using it tomorrow, and get our field people up and running with a solution to solve this critical issue for the company immediately. And then I can go back immediately. I've got a working solution. Now I can put in the corporate CSS. Now I can start to refine, get information from the users and refine this, go into some of the Seaside code and further refine and enhance the capability of this product you've developed. But it's up and out the door quickly, and then I can incrementally refine it and make it perfect. But I've got a solution immediately solving the company's business problem for a critical issue. So that's what Web Velocity can do for you. I told you that in some ways it makes things easier. Here's my local repository. I'm going to load an application called Temperature Converter App. And this is a very simple application. It doesn't use a database. You don't have to if you don't want to. And I just want to show you something interesting about this. So let's load this. It's a very simple application. It's basically three methods. What I did was take the template it gave me here. Okay, I tell my HTML, I've got a heading level one, and the title is going to be Temperature Converter. And I've got two things. I've got two forms I'm using on the screen, one for Celsius, one for Fahrenheit. And the text input value is going to show Celsius and Fahrenheit. And these are two instance variables I created in the application. And oh yeah, when you change that, call this Celsius to Fahrenheit, C to F, and Fahrenheit to Celsius. So the other two methods of the three methods, here's the conversion. I get a Celsius value. I make it an integer because it's text coming in. It's a string. And here's the calculation. 9/5 of Celsius plus 32. That's the conversion for Fahrenheit. And I've got a similar thing. Just two lines to convert Fahrenheit to Celsius. So what does that look like? So I can type in my Celsius value. Let's say 23 degrees Celsius is 73 Fahrenheit. It's a little warmer. 88 Fahrenheit is 31 Celsius. So it's a very simple application. But notice, this is as simple or simpler than a client application. You saw the code, the conversion code is two lines each. And just a few lines of rendering. And I've got a running application. I don't have to figure out, okay, which thing changed and what to do when and update the other one and try to distinguish. I'm getting a dump of HTML information and figuring out what went on. I don't have any of those difficulties. It's very simple and straightforward. So it's the marriage of using it for everything what it makes available, for what VisualWorks makes available, for what CSite makes available, for putting all this into a browser IDE. Another reason you might want to use this is you can do, today a lot of people work remotely. There's offices where people get together, but also a lot of times people work remotely. They work out of their home office, they work in different offices around the world. This is a way for Web Velocity is a way for people to remotely work together on a single project. And we're going to be enhancing this collaborative ability in the future and add more things, but you can do that right now. So you can have a web designer and a CSite developer and your CSS guy, all different places around the world working together and basically viewing the results real time and working with each other. And what we're going with that for the next release is, if you've seen something like Google Wave, a collaborative thing where you can literally see, if Jim and I are on Google Wave and he's typing something, I can see character by character him typing. In the next release, you'll have that ability in Web Velocity. So really good for collaborative development. In the future, maybe you want your customer who you're developing it for, you want him to see the results and say, right, that's what I mean, or, well, like that, but I want, can you do this? And you've got the developer, well, sure, try that, reload your page, boom, right, that's what I'm talking about. But the CSS is a little off for this, can we have, okay, yeah, let me get this in. And so you can have a team working with the customer remotely, online together. And this is some of the power and innovation that we're bringing to this that nobody else has right now. And that is basically Web Velocity. So the simple application, the temperature converter, showing you how building an application in this can be just as simple or simpler than a web application. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer all your questions here. If you don't know the answer, we'll get the answer for you. Any feedback is always welcome. And please contact any of us, especially if you have part of it. If you look at this and say, that's perfect, except what I really need is, I want to know what that is. So any feedback, these are the right people to contact. Please talk to us. Let us know what you need. Do our best to deliver. Any questions?
Yes, regarding the example with the database, I assume that here you create a new database based on the code that you typed in or copied in this way.
In my database table, my database setup, I specified the name of the database I wanted to use, mm-hmm. and then my table descriptions told it how to create those tables in the database.
But the code which was in... was common actually, which you pasted in.
Yes. That was my table description, and then it generated the table definitions based on that.
Okay. So actually what you should do is just uncomment the parts that you want.
Right. It basically has a script that's commented out, so you'd uncomment it and plug in your names and then write create the tables.
Give your own, so it doesn't take the names out of the database.
You can do that. I mean, if you already have a database, you can generate your models from that. Okay. I went the other way. I created my models and said generate the tables.
Yeah, that's,
but you can go either way.
Okay.
So if my company already had these tables and said, okay, well, we've got a client application, now we want a web application, I can go right from there and say, okay, generate the product model and map these things.
Arden, you should probably mention that in doing both directions, there are videos on our website. If you go to the Smalltalk video section, the Smalltalk daily section, rather, there's a whole section for Web Velocity, and under those, there's a demonstration doing what Arden did today, and another demonstration doing what you just asked about.
Okay. Second question,
sure.
Regarding the form that you showed that was created automatically, how easy is it to change the order in which the fields are shown? Because now, for instance, the product type was shown at the bottom, but I think it would be more interesting to have it at the top.
There's a method where you can reorder what order you want to see those things in, or if you want to go whole hog, you can just go right into a method and render it in C-side, just go
where you get wide open. The method that is created.
There's a method that tells it what order, literally, to create the thing. So you just take
not just what order, what variables are now. So, for instance, you had a table that had, say, 10 columns, and you only really wanted to allow four of them to be entered and the rest of them to default somehow, like maybe a timestamp yield or something. You can tell which ones to display and then have code fill in the rest. Or like Arden said, you can go custom and just take it and have C-side render it. So there's a whole framework of scaffolding that you can override in places. And again, going back to the screencasts, in terms of the simple thing that Arden just mentioned, in terms of overriding that method, there's a video demonstrating that as well.
Right, so you're right. You say you can change the order and filter what you want to see automatically generated, or go crazy with very custom rendering through C-side.
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Our contributor in the EU, Bruce Nell, reports that in Bern, Switzerland, NetStyleCH is looking for a Smalltalk developer who has experience with C-side, Scrum, Ajax, CSS, and JavaScript. In the USA, San Luis Obispo, California, Quest Staffing LLC is once again looking for a software engineer who has experience with machine control design and semiconductor manufacturing equipment. It is considered a plus if you have a 4-year technical degree as a software engineer, electrical engineer, or computer science professional, or if you have experience with Smalltalk, ControlWorks, PLC programming, and project management. This permanent position pays $90,000 to $120,000 US dollars per year, plus bonus and full benefits. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretations podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.